Thunder in Arkansas. I mean, there are a couple of guys got their brains beat out. Arkansas, you know, it was interesting. I had called a friend of mine in Little Rock, who's a pretty good basketball guy, yesterday, you know, a little bit before that ball game. And he'll go to see Arkansas. He'll go to see the Razorbacks play from time to time. And I asked him, I said, how much have you seen of UConn? He said, I've seen them three times. Not live, but he actually had watched them three times. And I said, what do you think will happen? He said, Arkansas can't handle their big people inside. So they can't handle them, you know. And somebody would have said Devo Davis is going to score 3 points, you know, and then and UConn have their way in the inside of this thing. I mean, you know, Arkansas can't win, can't beat them. But goodness sake, UConn's got a good basketball team, guys, obviously.
They do, yeah. No, they do. And a lot of people, when the brackets came out, Pat, a lot of people had them to the Final Four. We talked about this region a lot, and I said, you know, Kansas was the number one seed, but I said, listen, you could have six different teams win that region. I had Arkansas – I mean, I had UConn and UCLA in the Elite Eight game, and I had UCLA winning it going to the Final Four, but we'll get to UCLA in just a second. But no, this UConn team – they are on a roll right now. They've won, what, 9 out of their last 10 games, Pat?
I'd forgotten they had played Oklahoma State. I'd forgotten that until I heard y'all say that earlier.
Way back on December the 1st and beat them by 10. And that's the closest – OSU came the closest to UConn of any team in a non-conference game. They're 15-0 in non-conference games. They've won all of them by double digits. They're blowing people out. They led by as many as 29 in this one, but to shoot 57%, and you know how Arkansas can play defense, Pat.
Well,
they shot 57% in this game, and you know, 45% from three, and they get to the line, and they share the ball. That's what Musselman was saying after the game was 22 assists. That's a bunch of assists, 22 in a college game. They're impressive. They really are. Now, having said that, Gonzaga just has a little magic to them this year. I don't know. I mean, I still would pick. I would pick UConn.
But, you know, talking about, excuse me, Craig. I'm talking about magic. This doggone Kansas State now.
They
beat Florida Atlantic. And I ain't even seen a line on that thing. I mean, they certainly could. I mean, he might be the coach of the year for what he's done up there.
Well, has he already won some of them, Matt? Jerome Tang, 56-year-old, first year.
It's a good question. I know he was a leading candidate for some. I know Shaka Smart at Marquette was too. I'll try to see if some of the ones they've awarded.
Yeah, he probably will win some. I mean, the job that
he's done. I mean, just totally rebuilding that thing, and those kids and. Obviously, like y'all talking about, that little old guard had a hell of a night. Well, he set a record for assists, didn't he?
The most ever in an NCAA tournament game. Ever.
Ever.
19 assists. We were just saying 22 assists is a ton of assists in a college game.
Man.
Well, Marquise Noel just had more assists than Michigan State did as a team. Michigan State had 18 assists team, and Marquise Noel had 19 assists. And, Pat, he did it after turning his ankle – early in the second half, what was it, 15 and a half minutes to go in the game? His ankle, and it looked bad at the start, and he's having to have help to get off the court, and he had it taped up, comes back in, didn't seem like he could move around much at first, and he just kind of willed his way. Like he said, he wasn't going to leave a game to go to the Elite Eight and, you know, have a chance to go to the Final Four. This guy, man – the toughness of that kid, but K-State, Pat, you know, to hang in there time after time when Michigan State keeps coming back, and the play of the game after it finally goes overtime, 52 seconds left in overtime, and he does that alley-oop. After he acts like he's arguing with Tang on the sideline, and they look like they're motioning him back and forth.
Him and Tang claimed that they were having a gusting. It wasn't a fake deal. You know that he just caught the kid out of the corner of his eye and let it happen. I mean, whether we'll ever know the truth or not. Oh, but golly, I mean, Kansas State. I mean, they play good. They play good. Doggone.
They got a bunch of guys who are not afraid of the moment. That's what you got to do to win a tournament like this. But obviously, Noel is not, like we said, he grew up in Harlem on the streets of Harlem. If you know, you're not afraid of anything, and he's loving it. This is the moment of his life to be putting on a show in the Garden like that. But other guys, like that we don't talk about a lot, like Tomlin. Sills fouled out of this game, but Gasan comes off the bench. He doesn't have much offensive talent, but he's a big body in there. But he goes 5 for 5. He even made a three-pointer. And this Masood, Pat, we talked about the deep three that he hit earlier in the tournament, which was one of the key shots in the tournament where he pulls up from about 30. He did it again last night. And then even the bigger shot was the one he hit in overtime off that inbounds pass from Noel on the inbounds play on the baseline. Yep. And he throws that bounce pass to Masood, and he hits the little fadeaway two-pointer from the right baseline. But Masood goes 5 for 8, 4 for 6 from three. And so I think, yes, we do want to talk about Marquise Noel.
But it's not like he
did it by himself. You know, it took Gasan and Masood, and Carter hit a couple of threes. Tomlin is so 4 offensive rebounds. And Keontae Johnson, the kid that played at Florida, Pat, played 45 minutes in this game. Noel, even with the injury, ends up playing 43 minutes in this game. And that Keontae Johnson, that guy is talented, Pat.
Well, you know, the amazing thing to me, guys, you know, and we've talked about this, I'll be tanging them, what, had 2 scholarship guys remaining. I mean, this is a bunch that they just got in there and put together and somehow got them bonded. I mean, they play. There's not a whole lot of BS with them on the sideline. I mean, there's not much fool acting stuff at all with them. I mean, they just play basketball, looks like to me. Yep. You know, and to put this bunch together, you know, in this period of time, and you know, to be like what they are and go this far and all this kind of stuff, my Lord, it's really an amazing story. Well, you know, Florida Atlantic, I really thought Tennessee, watching that last ball game, I thought really Tennessee might go win the whole thing. Now, like I say, Craig, they get a little bit more limited than I realized offensively, but still, Florida Atlantic and Boca Raton, I've told y'all, we used to go up there. We lived in South Florida. That used to be a kind of a getaway place, you know, and the whole deal. And so it's so nice. I didn't even know they had a gym. I really didn't. Honestly. We used to drive around the campus and everything, and it's a really a neat little place. And you know, Snellenberger got in there and got the football building built, and then they were playing down at a high school stadium, and he got a stadium built. But I was just looking it up on their basketball website, and they've got a gymnasium that holds 2,900 people. You know, and it's and that's I guess crazy. They had apparently had redone it. It's named after a family up there because there's a lot of wealth, obviously, in that area.
In Boca Raton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody had given them some money, but it's you know, to redo the gym. But I swear, and these guys play good. They've got a good.
This was only their second NCAA tournament.
Golly, yeah.
And the thing was, like I said, Pat, Tennessee was locking them in the first half. They played like they did against Duke. On the defensive end, at least, held FAU to 22 points at halftime. Well, and really it was that way for about the first 10 minutes of the second half or whatever, and then FAU started knocking down the three-pointers. And I know that they only hit 8 out of 27 for the game, but they hit a bunch of them in that stretch. Forrest made consecutive threes to put them up by 2 with 9:49 to go. That was the first time that Florida Atlantic had led since the first minute of the game. Forrest went on a personal 8-0 run, hits the driving layup, and they're up by 4. Tennessee goes 6 minutes where they only scored 4 points. It was that stretch of the game. But what I'm saying, Tennessee dominated the first half and really – even halfway through the second half, it looked like they were still in pretty good shape. But Florida Atlantic, they started spreading the floor. They were doing some dribble drives to open up some room for some of those three-point shots. And then the other thing, like Matt said, is they had 14 second-chance points in this game.
Ooh, wow.
And so it wasn't – they did make some threes late, but – It's like the Jeff Borzello said in his piece on ESPN.com. He goes, they end up outscoring Tennessee in the paint. They had more rebounds. They had more second chance points. They had more fast break points and so forth. And so – yeah, 34-3, and we talked. This was – they hadn't even played a Power 5 team since November.
Mm-hmm.
But they're 34-3, one more games than anyone in the country, 20 games in a row earlier this season. They're currently on a 10-game winning streak. And I wouldn't just give this game to K-State on Saturday, Pat. I mean,
no, Lord, no, no.
Will battle,
no,
right?
No, no. Now, I didn't see a lick of UCLA and Gonzaga, so you said that was nip and tuck. UCLA was actually ahead with under a minute left in the game?
Well, UCLA dominates the first half, led by 13 at halftime. Just, I mean, dominated. All right? Well, then, and UCLA's still in pretty good shape halfway through the second half. Well, then Gonzaga goes on a run, and Gonzaga comes all the way from 13 down and is leading by 10. All right? With a couple of minutes to go, and 2.5 minutes, whatever, they were still leading by 7 with 50-something seconds to go, Pat.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
UCLA comes all the way back and takes the lead, and then UConn, and it's timeout. They draw up a play. Strother is mm-hmm. asking the coach if he can shoot the ball, and Mark Few, in no uncertain terms, told him, yes, if he's open, shoot it.
Fire it,
and he felt like he was open, and he fired up one from 30 and knocks it down, and they did it. Oh. They called it the old Jay Wright play that Villanova ran in the championship game a couple of years ago. And so they take the lead, but it wasn't even over after that. I mean, UCLA comes down, and they knock the ball away from Tiger, point guard, Tiger Campbell. They had a big turnover. Well, then – Strother only hits one out of two, and we didn't even mention this, that Timmy, as great as Timmy played,
oh, gosh.
Timmy missed a couple of foul shots late in that game that could have cost him. But anyway, so Strother only hit one of two this time. So my point is UCLA got the ball back. There's only a second to go. They throw a pass to midcourt. They shuffle it back to Tiger Campbell, mm-hmm. kind of like the play that where Bryce Drew hit the shot for Valpo in Oklahoma City.
Right, right.
And he fires it up, a runner from just inside the half-court line, and he almost made it. I mean, he got it on top of the rim, but he missed it, and Gonzaga gets out with the victory. But, no, it was a heck of a game, Pat.
Well, Timmy goes, drops 36-13, wasn't it?
36-13. Guy is unbelievable around the basket. His footwork and stuff. A lot of people say he won't be that much in the NBA. I disagree. I think that he'll have a spot. I'm not saying he's going to be a star. I'm saying he's going to have a spot for a long time because he just – some guys just have the knack of how to use their body and get the leverage and score around the bucket, and he has that. And he also has a nose for the ball, the 13 rebounds, Pat. But this Strother, and he's from Vegas, he hit the shot of the night for him. This Matt and I were talking, this Gonzaga team's not as good as some of the other ones, especially defensively, but they just seem to be on this magical run right now. So that it's gonna be a heck of a game. Like I said, if I had to pick right now, I'm picking UConn, but there does seem to be some magic to this Gonzaga team.
Oh, boy, I guess. Okay, now, we got time to get y'all's picks for tonight?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the first game is San Diego State, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking Alabama. Obviously, I haven't picked to win at all. That's the first game. 5:30 on TBS. Matt?
I'll go Alabama, but I say it's inside the number. Alabama, according to Caesars, is a 7.5-point favorite. I'll say Bama by 5. I think it'd be a good ball game.
I'm going Alabama 82. San Diego State 75. Now, I hope San Diego State beats their brains out, but they probably won't. 82-75 Bama.
Okay. All right. Then the second game, which starts 6:15, the first game on CBS, second game to start, Houston going up against Miami in the Midwest, Pat.
77, Houston 77-74 over Miami. That's my pick.
Close
Got
game.
Got about three.
Matt, and that's you have the number on that one, Matt, in front of you?
That's a bigger number than what I would have thought. It's 7.5. That makes me wonder if Sasser and Shedd aren't in better shape, health.
Now, they're claiming they're ready to go. They're claiming that. You know,
right. And, of course, we know how that is. You never know.
Right,
but,
right, right.
I don't know, Craig. I was kind of surprised they were that big of a favorite.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty big line there. But
I'm kind of with Pat. I would probably say a little less scoring, but Houston by three. I would pick Houston to win, but I think this would be a good one too. If I knew that Sasser and Shedd coming into the game were healthy, I would probably pick Houston by, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8, something like that. Yeah. But their health concerns me. I'll still take the Cougars to win.
Larinaga has my respect, but that line tells me maybe Vegas, with that line, I'm going to go ahead and pick Houston to win by maybe 10 or so. Maybe Vegas trying to tell us something there. Okay.
I got Creighton 70. Okay. Creighton 70. I got Creighton over Princeton 70-66.
And that's the first game the late game on TBS, the first of the two late night games. So you got Creighton. What's your score,
mm-hmm.
Pat?
70-66. Creighton.
Okay, so close over Princeton. What's yeah. Creighton favored by?
Creighton's a 9.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
I say it stays in the number as well. I'm really pulling for Creighton. Many people know Oklahoma City native Trey Alexander plays for Creighton. Has had a really good sophomore year. So I'm pulling for Creighton. It's not that Princeton can't win this game. I mean, they beat, Arizona, for crying out loud. It was Arizona, right? Yeah, it was.
Yep.
Dumbass picked Arizona to win it all. Anyway,
and then Missouri. Yeah.
And then Missouri. But I think Creighton's a better team. I'll take Creighton inside the number. Four or five, somewhere in there. I think Creighton wins a good game there. But Prince, you better not make a lot of mistakes against Princeton. They'll make you pay.
Okay, I'll take Creighton. I'm going to say Creighton wins double digits also in that one. 8 o'clock on TBS. And then the nightcap, Pat, this is maybe the game of the night. Xavier and Texas, 8:45 on CBS, Pat.
Texas 87, Xavier 83. 87-83 Texas.
And what's the line on that?
That's right around the number, according to Caesars, 4.5.
Okay.
Yeah, Texas. I would take Texas. This would be the game where I would have someone covering the spread. I'm not saying Texas beats them by 30. I don't think that, but I would take Texas by about 7, somewhere in there. I'm high on Texas, guys. We've talked about it, you know,
good, for
a while. I just think they got and Vital talked about it on SportsCenter this morning. If Dessou continues to play as efficiently as he has been playing, they're really tough to deal with. You know, I've kind of been hot and cold on Dessou a little bit. This year, the big guy inside, sometimes, I don't know, guys.
Rightly so.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes he's kind of lost out there, but wasn't he like the most outstanding player of the Big 12 tournament or whatever it was?
He's playing by far his best basketball of the year right now.
Yeah.
And I'm with you, man. I mean, I got Texas losing to Bama in the title game, and I lost UCLA from my Final Four last night. But Texas, I'm going to be real surprised. But this Xavier team is a darn good team, 27-9.
Yeah, yeah.
They've played well in the tournament. Obviously, they beat now they were trailing Kennesaw State a lot in that first round, but then had the victory over Pitt. They'll take on Texas in the nightcap, 8:45 on CBS. And so, Pat, you're saying Texas by 4 in
mm-hmm.
that one.
Yep.
And I'm with Matt. I think I would have to pick Texas to cover. I'm just high on them right now, but. But a lot of respect for Xavier. I think that might be the game of the night. And Pat, we did get a text that Taylor Moore's dad, Rod, who listens to us all the time, but he's an Arkansas guy. He went to school there, played there, was an assistant coach there, and he also said that was impressive by UConn. He said UConn is good. He goes, don't know who can beat them if they're shooting like that. And that's a great point because – they are so good on the defensive end. When UConn is making shots like that, Pat,
I know they're hard to handle.
I agree with Rob.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who is going to beat them if they're shooting like that. So, man, this shapes up to be with UConn, Gonzaga coming up later this weekend. We talked FAU, K-State. I mean, I think that's a sneaky good game right there. We'll see who comes out of this. Yeah,
you got such an interesting contrast to me on these games tonight, coaching wise. You know, the San Diego, the obviously McDermott, the guy at Creighton, might be one of the better, more overlooked, I think, really outstanding coaches around. You know, he's everywhere he's been has awfully been good. You got Texas has got the interim guy. You know, I don't know what
Rodney
you consider
Terry.
The guy at Alabama. I'm not sure what I consider him, but the. And then Kelvin, who we've seen before, Larinaga, the guy at Miami, he's done really outstanding things over the course of his career. This will be in Princeton's Princeton. You know, this this is an interesting bunch.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, Kelvin, Larinaga. I mean, that's a tremendous coaching match.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
North Carolina's 21. Then you got UCLA, Kentucky, and Duke with 17. KU 16. Ohio State, Michigan State 10. Then you got Indiana, Louisville with 8. Now you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 schools tied with 6. Arkansas, Cincinnati, Houston, Michigan, Oklahoma State, and Syracuse. And I stopped after that. North Carolina, good job.
Max,
good job.
Our winner Max. Today. So 21. And so you say North Carolina with 21, and then you had Kentucky, Duke, also, UCLA with 17.
UCLA with 17.
Yeah, you KU forget 16, North Carolina. Yep. I mean, Dean Smith had a great run, but then Roy Williams also had a
great run
there, obviously.
Certainly.
But, no, hey, this time of year is just good, Pat. And you know, coming up, I mean, we're going to have some great matchups, but even – this Elite Eight matchup with UConn and Gonzaga.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
just crazy. We could have a Houston, Texas. Don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but, I mean, we could have something like that. But even the FAU K-State, you know, in the Garden, that's going to be fun to watch Elite Eight coming up this weekend. Okay, Pat, you said the Notre Dame AD had some interesting comments.
I'd seen it, and Matt had seen it earlier. Jack Swarbrick, who is the athletic director, he's been around for a pretty good while, athletic director at Notre Dame. He had done a op-ed for the New York Times and did a piece with interview with Sports Illustrated. I'd seen it this morning on sportsillustrated.com. But, you know, and he's exactly right. I know, and Swarbrick is saying, I'm quoting here, college athletics is in a crisis right now. And he's exactly right. You know, and they know it. Most of the guys out there know it. Now particularly the coaches, got to be careful about how they word it, because then somebody's going to use it against them. In recruiting, that you're not for the kids, you know, and don't want the best for little Johnny and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, these guys that have been around this any length of time understand that this is, you know, and he's pointing out the fact that do you need limited federal legislation on this? Probably do, to get something done with the NIL. I mean, as far as making, you know, actually some laws to create things. And Swarbrick is saying, you know, if people say it's impossible to do, no, it's not impossible. But he's talking about, as far as the colleges being responsible for divulging how much a kid's getting, where it's coming from, and all these kinds of things. And you know, now, does it end up being something else, or you get it where everybody's getting the same, or these kinds of things? But essentially, he's saying that hey, you know, we might be, you know, realistically staring at a different level, that somebody at some point is going to take, you know, and break off this thing, you know, and start actually putting some rules in on this, because they're just running rampant right now. I mean, they literally are just everybody out there going all over the place with this NIL stuff and the, you know, the portal stuff, which I think is way, way out of whack. Well, I think there's already been, 2,000 kids have entered the portal this time already. You know, and but anyway, this is a pretty interesting piece from a guy who's been inside this thing for a pretty good while, and you know, getting into the collectives and you know all the things that we talk about. But this is not just some guy shooting his mouth off. This is a guy that Swarbrick was a former attorney before, and you know has always been on, has been close to a lot of these committees and all this kind of stuff. So this is a really big piece.
No, I think he's exactly the guy that people listen to regarding college athletics, has been for a number of years, like you said, Pat. You talk about the portal. I mean, OSU with, 28 newcomers to spring practice, and you said OU has 26 or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just the way of the world. What I would like to know, Pat, and I know we're not going to see this, but I'm just curious, just as a longtime fan of the sport, I would like to know how much all the top schools – are paying per year, which I know they aren't paying anything, Pat. It's zero for this. But I would like to know how much NFL, the collectives, that what, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
I would like to know how much the players on each team are making total. Listen, and I'm glad they're making money. I'm not trying to say that the players shouldn't be able to make money, but I'm just curious as a fan, how much money? How much money are the collectives or the boosters, however you want to put it, having to come up with per team? And I know even if you ask the schools for it, for the you know the information, it's not going to be exact because you never know how much you know that certain guys are getting under the table, this and that. But I would like to know a round figure on what it's costing to pay the players, Pat.
Well, that's what he's getting at. That you know the universities can be in charge of making these numbers, you know, reporting these numbers. Now, you know, and there are not even any guardrails, let alone rules out there on this thing, you know, and the way it's going now. And he's saying exactly about what you're saying, Craig, that, you know, that you know, however you, you know, personally, I think they've been getting paid because they're getting their scholarship paid for. That's my personal opinion. Now, you get into issues on whether they're, you know, they're paid, you know, you tax issues and all these kinds of things. And that, I mean, it's complicated stuff, which he's saying. I mean, you know, and just saying that, you know, it's not going to solve the entire problems. But, you know, he's saying that, you know, establish a national policy on medical trust funds for injured people beyond their term, you know, all those kinds of things, you know, and which they should be able to do. But as far as the reporting of what you're saying, Craig.
Yeah, it's a tricky deal because they're not employees, you know, of the university. The money's not coming from the university.
I know
it's a tricky situation. No, it needs guidelines. I think everyone agrees with that, right, Pat? I
mean, well, he's saying I'm quoting this, Craig. It's interesting. He said, we got to get our act together in college athletics and do things that we can do, okay? Quote, we can do it in ways requiring reporting on transactions.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're saying. Yeah. You know, I mean,
I'm just curious,
Yes, yeah. I mean, what's actually coming down here, you know, on these things? And, I mean, just to let it run rampant is not – I mean, that's crazy land to me, you know. I know some knothead like me, but it's really the analogy of, hey, if you took down all stop signs, all traffic signs, you would have no speeding. That's about what we're dealing with here, you know. So we don't like if do away with all laws, you have no crime. That's crazy.
My fear is that they're going to run out. They're going to run a lot of the great coaches in college football out of the sport from this standpoint, Pat. That if you have to keep doing that, rebuild a whole roster year after year after year after year, and you do that for a decade or more, I mean, it's going to get old.
You're crazy.
Gonna, you know, number one, I mean, they make a lot of money now. They might just quit and just count their money or they'll go to the NFL or whatever. But I'm just afraid it's going to run some of the sharper minds that we have in that sport out of the sport just because the effort and stress and all that it takes to rebuild an entire roster every year. Yeah. Or maybe not entire, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, better. I mean, as far as roster, you know, how you handle your roster recruiting, balancing your recruiting classes. Yeah. I mean, I personally think they ought to go back and make them set out a year just to just throw this thing down. You got to have something out there that just to wear on. Whims, he won't do it. Yeah, except for the players. But
the
players have
the freedom and the power right now. They love it, but it's just, you know.
It's just crazy. I mean, this is really a good piece, you know, and regardless of kind of how you judge this thing on what Jack Swarbrick has written here.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com. When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy, game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Craig Way, the play-by-play man for the Longhorn Network, doing a little comparison, talking about Bijan Robinson, right?
Well, I saw it it was pointed out to me on Fan Nation. You know, they got these different by schools, and the Texas one. Craig Way, who's been the voice down there, he's really a good guy, really hard-working guy, and has done high school and done, you know, voice of the Longhorns for a long time. Really, really a good guy. But it was interesting because they had somebody to ask him to, you know, Bijan Robinson, to compare him to, you know, who you think he's compares to. And you know me, we've talked about this for years. This is when you get into the evaluating process. If I'm sitting across the table from Al Davis or Jimmy Johnson or Bill Parcells, this kind of talk is probably going to influence them a little bit more than numbers. Okay, who does he remind you of and why, you know, and all this. But it was interesting that Craig Way, you know, talking about Bijan Robinson, you know, I mean, they got him at 4.46 in the 40 vertical, 37 inches, which is, you know, I mean, that's not the fastest or the highest, but it's very, very good stuff and everything. And he had ended up, you know, and what I've seen of the kid, now, again, this Craig's seen a whole lot more of him than I have, and I've never seen him live, but – you know, I would put Bijan Robinson kind of in the same family of guy with Cedric Benson and Jamal Charles. Now, the interesting one about that is, and you know, we had Ricky Williams at Miami, so I wasn't coaching running backs, but I was around Ricky for several years, including one of them where he led the NFL in rushing. And he would, without having seen this kid live, I would probably compare him a bit more physically, probably to Ricky Williams. You know, okay. he's not Earl Campbell. Now, there's the thing about Craig Way, the voice of, was comparing him to Barry Sanders. You know, now, I don't think it doesn't, with what I've seen of this kid, he doesn't look, I don't know if there's ever been anybody, period, that was as or more explosive than Barry Sanders. You know, anyway, and I'm going back on myself. I mean, but if this kid had a 37-inch vertical, Sanders had about a 42-inch vertical, you know, and the whole deal. I mean, Sanders was more explosive. This kid's a little bit taller. But as far as trying to, you know, compare, and I've seen everything from this kid being taken about 10th or 12th. I was looking at one of them this morning, and I don't try to put a whole lot of stock in some of these mock drafts. But as far as just giving you an idea of things, and I looked at one this morning that didn't even have him in the first round. And then we saw him, at 27 or something the other day.
Kiper, and Kiper said, he goes, I believe, he goes, that he's a top 10 back on my board. He's a top 10 prospect, but he said his positional value means he's going to drop into the 20s. But
see, I don't believe that concept. I think he's way wrong there. I mean, there's certain things he knows about, but certain things he doesn't. But that's
if it's a great running back, he's not going to drop.
I mean,
the 20s.
There's not such a thing as devaluating. You don't devaluate Jimmy Brown or Gale Sayers or Barry Sanders or Eric Dickerson. Those guys don't
Barry Sanders. Yeah,
right.
Gonna drop
No. Right. You're not. Those guys don't get devaluated. Now he's somewhat correct in saying that there's a whole lot of guys that there's not a lot of difference in when you start getting down below that level, you know, and most people are only using one back now, you know, whereas, you know, normally you had two people back there. I mean, so there's a lot of things to it, but never, I mean, the devalued running back is a totally bogus concept, because again, those guys that I named off and some others, you're going to take them if you can get your hand on them. You know, they just aren't.
I totally agree with you on that, Pat. All I'm saying, but I believe in this kid. Here's my point is, like Kiper in his latest mock draft, he had him going 27 to the Bills.
Yeah,
you put this kid with the Buffalo Bills, to me, that's the missing part of that offense in recent years has been a really good tailback. If you put Bijan Robinson with the Buffalo Bills, I'm telling you, that offense is going to be something else. It really is. I think this kid's going to have a great career. I'm not saying he's Barry Sanders.
Sure,
at
sure,
all.
Sure.
I'm
I know
not
it,
even
I know
saying
it.
He's Ricky Williams. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I believe in this kid. And if some team does get, or we talked the Cowboys at 26, or whatever,
so that's what I was fixing to ask.
If you get him at 26 or 7, I mean, a heck of a bargain. But
I would probably bet money that I'd bet some money that he'll show up probably from 11 to 20. Somewhere in that, you know, and with somebody, that to me is about the range of guy he could be, you know, depending on, Saquon Barkley, I thought looked to me better coming out than this kid does. You know, I'm viewing him from a long way off and everything.
Speed,
now,
right.
Barkley. Now, Barkley's been beat up and all this kind of stuff,
right?
Everything, but that's why I asked Matt the other day, you know, with your Dallas Cowboys, if all of a sudden, Matt, the Bijan Robinson, you start getting around 23, 24, 25, and Bijan Robinson's sitting there.
And now, Matt is saying draft for need, right, is what you were saying, Matt?
Not necessarily. I'm a best available guy. I think they
– depending on where you have him on your board.
Yeah, right. If he falls – now, I will say this. I don't know about trading up to get him, depending on what you have to give up, to trade
we're not
up,
talking about trading
you know?
Up. We're talking about if he's
at
there at 26.
Well, I would say the best player on the board, you take him.
Well, I'm saying if they get close, if you're in that room and say that's why I just threw out 20 trade up if you move from 26 to 23 with Minnesota or something. If you get into that range, you know, then maybe Dallas would become a player on this thing.
Maybe so. It would still depend on who was left, and like you said, Pat, it depends on what their board is telling them.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are, like, for example, let's say it gets to 23, okay?
Right.
And let's say there are, at that point in the draft, there's five or six guys, Pat, and you would know how this works better than I would. Let's say there's a handful of guys that relatively have the same grade.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth trading? In other words, what I'm saying is, if Bijan Robinson is not clearly better than the next three or four players in their mind, I don't know that it's worth trading up to get him unless you just think, hey, if we just trade a fourth rounder and we can move up three spots, we got to have this guy. I think it'll be interesting. I don't know if he falls that far. I'm a best available guy. I'm not somebody that says, you know, we got to, you know, Pat, you were talking about it yesterday with the quarterbacks, but I think it can apply to other positions as well. Gosh, darn it, we got to have a receiver. Well, then you
make him better than he is.
Correct. That's exactly right. And I think, and that can happen with any position. I think it happens with quarterbacks more than anybody because it's so important. But, if he's the best player at 26, I think you take him.
Matt, I think the kicker on this deal, we've talked about off the air, Pollard's still coming back
from
a broken leg.
You bet. Yeah.
You know, now, you know, if you're sitting in there and all of a sudden somebody's going to say, you know, are we totally convinced that Pollard's going to be I think a healthy Pollard is really – I thought he's better
too.
Than Elliott.
Yes.
And he's a very interesting guy, but he's still coming back off a broken leg.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah. So that's the interesting thing about – about Bijan Robinson. To me, if you with Dallas, if he gets within striking distance, you know, and they've got a and say they've got him around the middle of the first round, and then you start getting in there. Does he start jumping into, you know, Jerry and Steven's mind a little bit?
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is that, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.